It's time for All Things Napa with your host, Lee W. Miller, a community leader, full-time realtor, and a serial networker passionate about promoting local businesses. Let's learn what's new in the Napa business scene today.
Good morning, Napa Valley. This is Lee W. Miller with another edition of All Things Napa. Thank you, Lauren, for that spirited introduction. That is something new to the show. If you've never tuned in before, I am Lee W. Miller, and I am a full-time realtor when I'm not behind this microphone, and I'm also the official realtor of Wind Down Media, KVON and KVYN. That's kind of a cool thing. And I'm also the founder of Napa Business Advantage, a local business referral group. And I served 5 years on the Napa Valley Vine Trail Board, just recently stepped down last month, because this show conflicts with their board meetings. And so it was time to move on. Big thank you to our sponsors, Norvia's Insurance Services and KBS Leaders. And speaking of KBS Leaders, Kim is in the house today. Kim Brown Sims will be joining us here momentarily. And we also have Keith and Shelley Webster from Keith Webster and Construction Company. So we've got all kinds of cool things to talk about. Before we get really into the show, I do want to do a quick little shout out to the guys that are working on my house. I wanted to just scrape the popcorn ceiling off and paint, and it has turned in a little bit more than that. But Chewy, Armando, Luis, thanks for the great job you guys are doing. And I will see you later and check up on the job. And also, I wanted to do a shout out for the prostate cancer fundraiser. This is a silent auction, live auction, and dinner on April 25th at the Napa Valley Distillery. So anyone that's listening that has some interest in supporting this cause, please reach out to me and I will get you all of the details. We've got a take care of as much as we can, giving funds for cancer research. So, with no further ado, let me jump in and do the Napa Nugget. This is that one little trivial thing that I share with the audience in every show. And today's Napa Nugget is that in the Napa Valley, there are over 100 restaurants that have been awarded Michelin stars, and that is more Michelin stars per capita than any other wine region in the entire world. Quite impressive, and makes me hungry just thinking about it with all that good food out there. All right, let's get started with Keith and Shelley. Welcome to the show.
Good morning, Lee. How are you?
I am well. I'm not hearing you in my headphones, though.
Okay. Is there something I have to do?
Well, hopefully you're coming out over the air, but
test 1, 2, can you hear me?
I'm not hearing you either.
And I'm not hearing either one.
Volumes
here
are
comes
up.
The tech.
Bear with us here, folks. We're microphones on, volumes are up. So two guys go into a bar. And one says, hey, do you want to do a radio show? And the other one says, not until I figure out how to work this board.
I can hear you now, Lee.
Okay.
One person.
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Keith, can you hear?
I can hear, but I just am not being heard as usual.
Turn up the volumes on your headphones. Maybe that will help.
How's that?
I can hear you.
I can hear her.
Can you hear us, Lee? Maybe your microphone needs to be turned up.
How many Aggies does it take to screw in a light bulb? We have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 people around this soundboard.
All right. I'm hearing things now.
Okay. Me too.
Us too.
Okay.
All right.
Well,
hopefully you can hear me as well.
Let's start that music over.
We'll sing together if you'd like.
There you go. You don't want to hear me sing.
We are good. So, rewind.
Start over. Do over.
Keith, Shelley, welcome to the show.
Good morning.
And that's all the time we have. Thank you very much for joining us today.
All right, we'll see y'all later. We have a lot of work to get to.
Yeah. So, Keith and Shelley, tell us a little bit about Keith Webster Construction. But before we get into that, tell us a little bit about you, how long you've been in Napa, and just kind of cool stuff that we might not know about you.
Well, Shelley's been around forever. I'll let her talk to that. As far as myself, I moved out here in 2008 from the mountains of Colorado. And prior to that, I was in Houston, Texas. So I've been around a bit, been here in the valley, moved to St. Helena first, and then moved down to Rutherford, and from Rutherford, we are now living in Browns Valley.
All right.
Which is everybody's neighborhood, from what I understand.
Except those of us who live downtown.
And in Alta Heights and other places, right, and right. North Napa, and, right. You know, da-da-da.
Everybody has their favorites.
They do.
Anyhow, we're in
We're all Napans. We all love living here, so it doesn't really matter what neighborhood.
Well, that's good to know.
Yeah. Sure.
Oh, a little bit about me, Lee. Like Keith said, I've been in Napa Valley for, 35, 40 years. I grew up in Australia. Family, my dad was in the wine business. That's how we ended up in Napa Valley. So I actually grew up in St. Helena. I graduated St. Helena High School and went off to college and ended up coming back to the Valley and have been here ever since and worked and had children and had my kids grow up here. And now they're grown up and far away. So I'm local. I've been part of the community for a long time. I've been part of Kiwanis. I've been part of leadership Napa Valley. Lots of things. I love our community here.
Great. So we want to help people know your business and help promote your business. That's the whole point of the show, is if people listening will connect with you on a personal level, then they're more likely to reach out to any business that comes in here. So tell us how long you've been a contractor in Napa and the kinds of jobs that you do.
Well, I've been a contractor for a long time, 46 years.
Wow.
I started when I dropped out of medical school.
Were there square nails back then?
Actually, I used to make square nails.
Oh, really?
On a what do you call it, ding thing? Anvil.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah. I learned how to be a blacksmith early on in my careers.
Wow.
Very young. So you have got square nails. They're actually called cut nails. And, yeah, they're actually wonderful nails.
So as Nate was leaving the studio, he said, make radio history. I think we just did. We interviewed somebody that was a blacksmith. A former blacksmith, because there's probably not a whole lot of people looking for blacksmiths today, but...
Right, and it's a really hard, it's hard on your body. I mean, I learned to do it years ago as an assistant horse trainer on a ranch in southern Illinois, actually. I worked under a guy named Austin Roper, who was a great horse trainer. And at the same time, I had apprenticed under a master farrier in St. Louis who used to shoe for the Bush Bavarian Stables and for all the racetracks around. And this guy had a PhD in education.
Wow.
And he taught seventh grade, and kind of on the side, he shoed horses for everybody in the area that had, you know, horses to shoe. And
wow.
Corky Helms was his name. He's still around in Belleville, Illinois. And I apprenticed under him as a farrier.
Wow.
So I'm kind of multidisciplined.
That's a great little trivial thing about Keith. So
it's trivial for sure. It's been a long time.
I have no idea. There's so many.
Right. It's been a long time. It is hard on your back and knees and everything else. But I earned enough money doing it to put myself through college. So it's actually a pretty good trade.
Wow. You know, most people wait tables and things of that nature. So you shoot horses and made nails.
Well, yeah, I was in the horse business back then.
Right.
And I started in the horse business when I was about
15 years old. So,
oh, wow.
Bought and trained horses and sold them and, you know, was a farrier and
da-da-da-da-da. I've known you for a couple of years, and I've never really heard the Texas accent until you said Houston. Did you fall into that after saying Texas, or?
No, I get told that a lot. I moved to Texas when I graduated high school, and I moved my horse business to Texas, and I picked it up, and I cannot get rid of it. And when I go to visit friends in Texas, it gets thick. It gets really hard to not hear it.
Right.
But I try my best to be Midwestern and accent free. It doesn't work very well.
It doesn't work very well. I have to say, I was born in Arkansas, and I get around anybody with a drawl, and it comes right out. I don't know what that is.
Yeah, and it was almost like it came out after he said that he was from Houston, Texas. So
I'm from Texas.
Right. How y'all?
Y'all.
How y'all doing?
I just want to know if the horse trainer with the last name of Roper also then developed Roper boots.
I doubt it. He taught equestrian sports at Columbia University in St. Louis, and I don't think he did Roper boots. I think that's a pure marketing play.
Ropers and Wranglers, that's the way it was.
I've worn them both.
Me too.
All right, let's talk about construction.
Oh, okay.
Oh, that's why we're here.
Yeah, I forgot about that.
So what's your favorite kind of project to do?
Well, you know, historically, I've done pretty much everything. When I started, my first few jobs were working for NASA, the space guys.
Oh, wow.
And I worked and did a bunch of commercial work for those guys and worked for Grumman Aerospace and Martin Marietta, did a bunch of computer rooms and computer floors. I've done strip centers. I've done retail in malls. I've done, as far as residential, I started doing historic restorations in Houston, and it's amazing there are still a few historic houses in Houston. We used to have to match everything to what was existing as opposed to what the new guidelines are now, where they want you to make the new part look like something new. So we do a lot of high-end residential work, whether it be kitchen remodels, bathroom additions, whole house additions, new construction. We sort of specialized in that residential market for a while. So that's where we are. We are currently getting ready to start a small winery project over in Glen Ellen. We are looking at a larger winery project here in the Napa Valley also. So we're pretty multidisciplined.
Very good. So you've done a lot of commercial stuff in the past, but now it seems to be in this area a little more high-end residential and winery focus?
Well, I mean, even in Houston, I got, for lack of a better term, pigeonholed into, you know, real high-end residential.
Okay.
And then from Houston, I moved to Aspen, Colorado, and Aspen has a plethora of high-end, if you could call
really?
It that.
Really? I was not aware of that.
Well, you know, some of those people up there have more money than God, so.
Right.
Or at least as much.
Right.
So that was pretty much a 10-year stint doing nothing but how much more money can I spend on a project,
right?
As opposed to how much money can I save on a project. So
right.
It's sort of a different outlook on life.
Wow. Yeah, that would be.
Mm-hmm. It was interesting.
Yeah.
We did a lot of work for a lot of rich and famous people who will not be disclosed.
Because you had to sign an NDA?
Had yes. to sign NDAs, you bet.
What's the time limit on those? When can we know?
You're supposed to never tell at all. I mean, there's some people that you would definitely recognize their names because they're newsworthy.
Right.
So, but, and then when I moved out here, it was just, I started all over again. It was right after the 2008 crash. There was no business in Aspen literally for years. And I decided I wanted to move out to the Napa Wine Valley and learn to make wine. I enrolled at UC Davis and started doing winemaking courses up there while I started over again, literally from the ground up. Luckily, I have all the skills necessary to do any kind of work. So I started with my own tools again and started building it up and had a crew. And then I've still got some of the same guys working for 11 years later.
Wow, that's great.
So, I mean, it's really a nice little project, and you know, we do mostly residential, as I say. So,
11 years, some of the same guys still on the crew.
Yep.
That speaks volumes to you as an owner and a manager.
And a leader.
And a leader. And that's what I was going to say, because that's what Kim's all about. If you were to say, man, I just go through guys left and right. I can't keep any employees. I would say, you need to talk to Kim afterwards. You're doing something wrong, but obviously you are doing something correct. So.
Well, I think Shelley's doing most of it. She's the HR person. You know, she tries to keep me on the straight and narrow. But
we have a good culture in our company, definitely. We love our employees. We treat them well. They treat us well. They're loyal. We're loyal to them. So I think it's just kind of a symbiotic relationship.
Right.
Of mutual respect, really.
It really is, and that's the way that it should be. It's so obvious, but yet some business owners just don't grasp that concept, and they're always trying to get more out of the employees as opposed to just giving them more,
right,
and then receiving more as a result. So.
Well, I always approach it as I've been an employee before, and I haven't been treated well.
Right.
So I know what it feels like to be on the other end. So. You know, I come in with that type of a mentality and empathy with people. We all have lives, you know. Every day isn't a good day. We understand that. So it's just making sure our employees are okay.
Right.
And going from there.
And that's the key right there, is really treating them with respect for them as individuals, because that's all that all of us want, is to be recognized for who we are and what we bring to the table. And when you say you are doing the best that you can do today with the circumstances that are affecting you, then you're on point with them, and then you have empathy and you're treating them with respect. And
right,
that's the key to the culture you're building and to your success and longevity and loyalty.
Absolutely. So you are in the middle of a high-end home, and you're starting a winery. Are you like booked for the next 6, 12, 18 months, or can you bring on more crew if you landed a couple of more jobs?
Well, what we do is we work with the people we have, and we schedule projects in a fashion where we are concentrating at the initial beginning of a project. That's a redundancy, I apologize. But we set up where we spend as much time as we need to getting a project started, and then we have subcontractors, so we can move our crew from the beginning of one project to the beginning of the other while the subcontractors are on there. So currently, we're looking for projects to start in the next 2 to 3 months. We're finishing up some projects. We have a couple of projects starting on down the line. These, you know, permitting in Napa. I'll just laugh at that for right now. But it takes so long to get things through permit that even though we have a couple projects now that we started working on with the owners almost a year ago, and we're probably about 2 to 3 months before we'll be able to do anything to start the project. So there's a long lead time. We try to keep our crew scheduled. And right now we are looking for a couple of projects to put in within the next, say, 60 to 90 days. We have a couple of projects that are winding up and some things that are going to be starting up, but we're still waiting on that sort of window to close, and we have a little bit of a window right now. We have what they commonly call bandwidth these days.
Right.
Not sure what that really means, but it used to mean you had radio waves. Now it means that you have time to do things. So we have a little bit of bandwidth right now.
I think it might be good for people to understand if they're starting to do a remodel, that you just don't start tomorrow.
No.
We have a lot of clients that come to us and they think that, oh, here, this is what I want to do. Can we start next week? And we kind of have to walk them through the steps of, well, first you need drawings, then you need structural engineering. That, you know, there's so many steps. Then after that, it needs to go through permitting. There's so many different steps, and a lot of them like, oh, I had no idea. I thought we could just start next week. And so it's a lot of, on our part, it's a lot of educating. And so we love to have the clients come in, we meet with them, we give them the steps on, this is what it takes to do a project from start to end, because most people don't know.
Right.
You know?
And do you find that to be the case with the high-end projects and the lower-end projects?
Both. Both.
That's interesting.
Sometimes the higher ends want it now, and it's like, Well, need a permit.
They're used to
that. Can't we do
that.
It without a permit? Oh, no, we need a permit. Well, you know, especially when you have people from out of town that don't know the different codes for Napa, what Napa requires, right. too. So it's...
The absentee homeowners, that this is their second home, and they can just call somebody and have a room addition done in a few days.
Oh, that it were so.
Yeah.
We do a lot of the design work, too. We'll have people come in that say they want a project, and we actually have a contract with an architect over in Pleasanton, and he does all of our design work for us. So we'll bring somebody in with it, just a concept.
Right.
And we can do all the drawings and turn them around pretty rapidly. And then, of course, the permitting process takes 2 to 3 months just for the permit process, not including the design process. We've had a lot of people come in, like Shelley says, and say, we want to do this. And so, what do you have drawings? Well, we have, you know,
sketches.
A sketch.
Right.
And then from there to the point where you can submit for a permit.
They hand you a cocktail napkin.
Yeah. And,
literally.
And, you know, the city then hands you a... something that's voluminous as far as what they require just to turn in for a permit.
Sure.
So there's a lot of work that goes up. We call it pre-construction work. We do a lot of pre-construction work, then we move into the permitting phase, then we do the construction work, and then we just turn it over. So we encompass the whole thing. And then we also are opening up or morphing into an owner's rep business, where we have an owner that wants to develop a project, and we will work for the owner and represent him to the design and construction community and be his eyes and ears on the ground. That would be a real absentee owner sort of a business.
Right.
Or someone who doesn't realize what is necessary to develop something. And that's a new sort of venture that we've started and we're starting to develop in. Are entertaining some potential clients on that aspect too.
Shelley said that she really enjoys the educating aspect. I find that I do that as well as a realtor. We would all love to only buy and sell multi-million dollar homes, but I really derive a lot of satisfaction from first-time home buyers.
Absolutely.
And helping them learn the process and helping keep their feet to the ground, because they get a little freaked out and overwhelmed and things
we
of that nature.
Hands, so, yeah, definitely. And you know, for me, that's just something a little bit more innate. I was a teacher. I have a master's degree and part of a PhD. So I've taught everything from preschool all the way up to university. So teaching is in my heart, my soul, my blood.
Wonderful. Well, and you guys probably don't do much in the way of really small projects, right?
Define small.
For example, scraping the popcorn off a ceiling and painting it.
Not usually. We usually do that as part of a larger project. We're doing a 6-unit complex up in Yountville, and we're doing kind of one at a time. It's a rental unit for, an incredibly sweet guy. This guy is 96 years old. He's a retired psychiatrist, and he's blind.
Wow.
And he's owned these apartments in Yountville 50 years.
Wow.
And, you know, they haven't been touched. The town of Yountville is really happy we're doing this. And we're doing them one at a time as the people move out. And we scrape the popcorn ceilings and we paint and we put
in but six cabins. Versus a 1,200 square foot house kind of thing.
Well, these are like 400 square feet apiece.
Oh, wow.
So they're not very big. It's a small apartment. And we're doing them one at a time. So we roll through those. And so we come in, we scrape the popcorn ceilings, we put in new cabinets, new tile. And it's not a big job. I mean, it's under $100,000. That's a small job.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's a big spread there, but $100,000 just doesn't go very far in Napa Valley.
Right. Well, Keith and Shelley, we're really glad that we got to know you. And I know that folks can reach out to you. They can find you at kmwconstruction.com. Keith and Shelley, thanks so much for being here.
Thanks, Lee.
Thanks, Lee.
Welcome back to All Things Napa. That was fun getting to know Keith and Shelley a little bit more. Small job, $100,000. that's the Napa Valley, isn't it?
It is absolutely the Napa Valley. You know, $50 lunches. Yeah.
Well, and I felt a little, I don't know what the word is, a little discomfort in having my friends Keith and Shelley in here while I'm applauding the crew of Jesus and Luis and all the, and Jesus also goes by Chewy. But they're doing a great job on my little tiny, tiny project. And I assure Keith, they're gone now, but I assure I am not paying them $100,000.
Well, you know, there's...
And they're listening right now, and they're going, oh, yes, you are. That's a small job.
There's plenty of work to go around, believe you me.
Yeah. Yeah, and so many contractors are backed up. And, you know, they get inquiries, and they say, yeah, I can get to that in 9 months. And, you know, what are you going to do?
Yeah, it's the unfortunate situation from the tragedies that we've been encountering in the fire seasons over the last couple of years. I know we participate in the Browns Valley Neighborhood online chat, and there are people asking for handymen, you know, contractors to do small jobs all the time because you just can't find them.
Well, maybe I can put you in touch with my guys, and they, you know, because
sure,
they do the smaller jobs. Remind me to give you Gustavo's number.
Sure.
He was on the show a couple of months ago.
Oh, I missed him.
Yeah.
All right. So, well, that's great.
So I just want to plug the Locomotion event as well. So I'm no longer officially on the board of the Vine Trail, but I'm still part of the committee that's putting on our big annual fundraiser, and that's going to be on March 21st. The Vine Trail is such a great project, and I don't think anybody in our polarized society where there's always an us and them, I think the Vine Trail is pretty much unanimous. Everybody loves the Vine Trail and wants the Vine Trail to be completed. Not everybody has the means to make donations and things of that nature, but it is a great project, and I'm happy to have been part of it for 5 years, and I will continue to be part of it, just not on the board. But I'm also really excited about BASH. I don't know if you're familiar with that, Kim.
I'm not. Tell me about that.
That is Appalachian St. Helena. Mm-hmm. And they put a lowercase b in front of that just because it's a big party. And it's up at CIA Greystone. And it partners all of the wineries of Appalachian St. Helena with the student chefs. And they have a competition. And for 2 hours, you are eating amazing food and the best wine. And you have three little chips and you vote. And the winners, the students get sets of Le Creuset cookware.
Love it.
Yeah.
That's what I used to bake. Tell me what, when is that event?
That event is April 4th, and it will sell out. So I wanted my listeners to get all the tickets before it gets sold out. So,
well, if you're promoting things that you're participating in, then I'm going to do a shameless promotion for Blue Skies Ahead. I'm on the board of directors for Mentis, which is Napa Valley's mental health nonprofit. They do amazing work with all ages of individuals, and we know that mental health services are so highly needed everywhere, but especially here in Napa Valley. And their gala is March 14th at Charles Krug, and tickets sell out really fast as well. So
there's
my plug.
There you go. Well, as a sponsor of the show, you get to pretty much do whatever you want.
Well, I appreciate that, and I'm a sponsor of this event, too, Blue Skies Ahead.
So. Oh, wonderful. All right, so we're going to talk about, just remind our listeners who you are and what you do.
Sure. Thanks, Lee. Kim Brown Sims, and I own KBS Leadership Consulting. And really what we focus on is leadership development and business development. So I will come in as an executive and fill in or help your company get off the ground. I work with a lot of startups.
Just on an interim basis.
Just on an interim basis. I'm currently working with a solar company out of Sacramento as their chief operating officer, getting all of their fundamental business practices established. I have a 35-year background in healthcare, so I fill in healthcare roles as well. although that's not my primary, you know, job function. I also participate on advisory boards and boards of directors. I have a long history in that, as well as just doing implementation of projects as businesses need. Leadership development is my passion, though. I really love working with individuals and helping them grow in their skill set so that they can achieve whatever that next step is.
Right. So that's why I'm so excited to have you as a sponsor to get this information out. And, you know, as I've said before, I really hope that there are people listening who may not necessarily be the leaders that say, you know what, I could really use those skills that Kim has, so I will contact her. That's less likely to be the case. If it is, I encourage you, stop what you're doing and reach out to KBS Leaders Consulting Services and improve your business as a result. But more than likely, it's the employees that are going, holy moly, my boss could sure as heck use Kim. And we need to figure out a way to subtly get those two together.
Well, you know, it's also, you know, as we were talking with Shelley and Keith earlier, it's about cultural transformation as well. And, you know, there is it's a very simple recipe, and that really is respecting the individuals that do the work every single day. You really have to listen to them because they know what they're doing and they have great ideas on how there are obstacles to be overcome. And then your role as a leader is to remove those obstacles. And when you remove those obstacles, you're valuing the employee, you're listening to them, you're respecting them. They in turn feel valued and they're going to go that extra mile for you. So it is a pretty simple concept. And back to the individuals who aren't necessarily the leaders, I'll challenge you a little bit because my philosophy is that we're all leaders every single day in our words and behavior. And
maybe not in title, but
right. We set examples for those who are around us. So if you're working, you have a coworker who's next to you and the coworker is taking shortcuts and, you know, not being the professional that you'd like them to be, model for them what that looks like. And in that sense, you are a leader. And so it's really tapping into your own sense of expertise, professionalism, desire to grow and learn, and then leading by that example because people will notice.
Absolutely. I agree 100%. Also part of culture within an organization is diversity. And I think that's our topic for today. So why don't you launch into that?
So diversity and inclusion is something that I also have a passion for. And especially in this day and age, you hear a lot about the Me Too movements and people calling out behaviors that are being exhibited that are not great behaviors. And they're being called on the carpet. And it's really not about men versus women. Diversity and inclusion is really focused on making sure that there is representation. If you're a leader or have a leadership team, making sure that your team represents the people that you serve. So if you're looking at specifically in Napa Valley, you have quite a few Hispanic ethnicity, and you want to be sure that on your group of leaders, in your group of leaders, you have someone who has that ethnicity or that background so that they can represent that demographic that you're serving. That's kind of the concept of diversity. The concept of inclusion is not only bringing those individuals to the table, but making sure that they have a voice. Because it's one thing to say, come sit at the table with me. It's another thing to actually listen and take the information that they're bringing forward and act on it.
It's not checking a box.
It's not checking a box. You know, there's legislature in California now where board of directors have to have at least 50% female representation, which is absolutely phenomenal. But are you going to bring those individuals to the table and actually listen to them? Are you going to give them a voice? Because that's really what we're trying to achieve is as a society, is making sure that all perspectives are represented, that you're looking at issues through a very broad, wide lens. And again, representing the individuals to whom you serve.
Right. And if one is a female, mm-hmm. that's part of that 50%,
right.
and they're not proactively making their voices heard,
mm-hmm.
shame on them.
Right. So I love you that you brought that up because I love you too, Kim. I wrote some notes around inclusion, you know, because inclusion is giving people a voice, right? If you're sitting at a table, you're a leader, making sure that everyone has had the opportunity to speak or to share their ideas, that no one is being shut down, or because there are those of us who are introverts, and I know you're looking at me like there's no way you're an introvert, but I am. I'm an extroverted introvert because I recoup by being by myself versus a true extrovert who gets energy from being around other people. So if you didn't know that, there's that. But, you know, if you're an introvert and you're sitting at the table, it's you as a leader making sure that you're giving that person an opportunity to speak. You know, Lee, you haven't had the opportunity to speak yet. Do you have any thoughts on the topic so that you create a safe space? Sometimes putting them on the spot will cause them to clam up even more. So then there is so what we're going to do is these are the ideas that we have gathered at the table today. And if anyone else has anything they'd like to add, please email me if you haven't had the opportunity to speak. Please email me by the end of the day so that your opinion can be considered. So
that's so basic, and yet I hadn't thought of that while you were leading up to talking about that. I was almost getting ready to ask you a question, then how do you draw it out of them? And there you go. It's so easy and so logical.
Right. But we don't take the time. We don't take the time. And that's really
And then later there's the conversations. Well, I don't know what to do. They're in the room and they don't say anything. I guess we got to find somebody else.
Right. It's seeking those opportunities. But to your point, the part that I love you about is the fact that, you know, people are given, when they are given opportunities, if they don't step up to the plate, if they self-exclude, then it really does come down to them. Because I know as a leader, I've had that happen before where I've received feedback, someone feels excluded. So taking opportunity, multiple opportunities to say, come to the table. What opinion do you have? Email me. Let's consider this. Oh, this individual brought this information forward. What do you think we should do? You know, is this something else to be considered? And is there, you know, in the room support for going in that direction? And that individual continued to say, I'm excluded. And so there does come to be a point where you have to sit and just say to that individual, here are all the things that I'm, you know, doing or that we're doing to include you. What is it that you need to feel included? And so that leads me to another leadership principle, which is leading with the word what when you are engaging with individuals. Instead of saying, we all know, use open-ended questions instead of yes, no questions, if you want to actually draw people into a conversation. As you heard me say, I tried this, I tried that, I tried the other. The reality is the way to get to the end result is to say, what does being included look like to you? And it's the same as the idea of everyone being treated equally and, you know, live by the golden rule, do unto others as you'd have them do unto you. But the reality is in a diverse and inclusive environment or society, it's do unto others as they would have you do to them. And that's a shift in thinking.
Whoa.
I know. It makes you stop and think.
Yeah.
Because if you say, I'm going to treat you like I want to be treated, maybe that doesn't resonate with them. Maybe they feel like that's being rude. I mean, if you think about...
Or too much interaction.
Right. So can you think about some ethnicities where it's not okay to look them in the eye? Right. There are those types of individuals who don't appreciate that. Some Asian cultures, if you look someone in the eye, you're being disrespectful, where other cultures, when you look someone in the eye, you are respecting them, you're valuing them, you're showing them through nonverbal communication, which is the last topic we discussed, that you are actually hearing what they're saying. But in other cultures, not so much.
It almost seems like it's become, not burdensome, but almost like, oh my goodness, how do I implement all of these things when I'm not even aware of certain things that I'm doing wrong as a leader?
Right.
I'm doing the best I can. I thought I was doing everything right. And then later I find out you offended him and her and you know, them. And it's like,
I knew you were going to bring that up. I don't know. Maybe I knew you well enough, but I just had this, you know, idea that you were going to say, you know, how do you make yourself aware? How do you not walk around on pins and needles?
Right.
And the reality is there's a couple different tactics.
As a strong leader, you can't have that persona or even, you know, the appearance of pins and needles. You have to be confident and, you know, assertive.
And I as a female have exhibited those traits and then been cornered for being too assertive and too right. Where if I was a man, that'd be, that's right. You know, great leadership.
And all of those things for a female adds up to a different word.
Correct. And so the reality is I am really not, my position on diversity and inclusion is not male versus female. My position on diversity and inclusion is let's create equity, meaning let's make sure that we're removing barriers to individuals achieving the goals that they want to achieve. What do we need to do to help people achieve their goals? And that's really, as a leader, what we should be doing across the board. You want to take the next step. You want to grow in your position. You want to go back to school. What is it that I can help you with as a leader to help you achieve that goal? That's equity versus saying everybody gets equal treatment. That's right. A little bit different. But as far as walking around on pins and needles, you know, the best strategy you can use is one, be yourself and be authentic. And two, if you feel like you've struck a chord with someone, to say, you know what, it looks like I might have stepped in something there. Can we talk about that? Or, you know, people are now afraid. I've heard some of my male counterparts are afraid to give a woman a compliment because they feel like it's going to be received in a sexist kind of, you know, persona. Instead, you know, why not just say, I would like to give you a compliment. Are you okay with that? Clear the path. And I know that sounds, like you were saying, a little bit burdensome, but it's always better to ask, because if you don't ask and you just plow through and then it's taken, you know, not in the way you had intended, you've not invited conversation. And honestly, if you're complimenting somebody, you want to engage with them. Oh, wow, you really look nice today. Instead of saying that, say, you know what? The way you're dressed really strikes me. And are you okay with me giving you a compliment? Because once you've engaged in that dialogue, you're going to build a relationship with that individual. That's the key to leadership, right? Is that relationship that you build.
Right. So back to the point where you don't look at the male, female quota, like, right. What about having that same approach and same philosophy for everyone,
right,
regardless of ethnicities or anything? Culture, so then it becomes more of a, okay, we need somebody representing us from the sales department, from customer service, from marketing, from operations. And then it goes back to the whole, all of these ethnicities or religious or sexual orientation, all these different groups, and those are just some of the categories. They all want to have their pride. They want to be recognized and cheer them. It's like, but yet we're also being told as a society, just treat everybody the same, live and let live. And so there seems to be a little bit of a contradiction there. Mm-hmm. And if that's going to spill over into good leadership also, you know, comment on that.
Well, so I think that as a society, as a human, you know, race, we're still trying to figure all of that out, right? But the reality is, I'll give just a prime example. There was on social media the other day a post that I actually forwarded, and then I started thinking about it more, and it talked about the characteristics of an assertive woman. And then it really started to kind of hit home to me, like, why do we have to call out an assertive woman? Why is it being differentiated? It should just be anybody who shows assertiveness should be respected for what they bring to the table and not judged regardless of what that moniker is, female, male, whatever. It doesn't matter, right? We should all just be respected for what we bring to the table, the intelligence, the question, the culture, the creativity, assertiveness, yeah, whatever. Okay,
my wife's assertive, but it's sassy.
And I love her sassiness.
Well, and that's just about finding a good fit. And it's the same in leadership. It's the same in business. You have to find what's going to work for the team and what's needed in that culture. So when you talk about making sure there's equal representation in a business setting, it's about breaking down silos. So I have an example actually on my website about everybody being in the canoe and working really hard at paddling. They're not in sync. They're not working together.
And everyone's paddling, so nobody's steering.
And so what you have is people knocking each other in the head and out of the boat. The boat's going in a circle. It's tipping over. People are yelling at each other because nobody's working together. There's no clear vision. There is no, how are we going to accomplish this goal together? Everybody's working on their own. And not to say they're not working hard, they're just not working together. So the key really is to break down the silos, make sure there's representation. So whenever you're working on a project, and again, this is basic project management, are the people at the table who are in the evaluation and planning phase of the project, are they representative of the end user of the project? Whatever the outcome of the project is going to be, are those individuals who are going to be affected by it represented at the table? Basic concept, and it transfers over to all of the things that we're talking about in regards to diversity and inclusion.
So how long is that going to take in society? And how can you not working more hours to make that a reality worldwide, Kim? Come on.
Yes, I absolutely am. And I have to, the last time I was here, I gave a shout out to Melinda Gates. She has a huge initiative around this.
I'm sure she's listening.
I'm sure she is too. Melinda Gates. So she did a study, and it said for even just gender equality in terms of, so there's equality and there's equity, right? So equity means making sure that people have what they need at the time that they need it. Equality means equal treatment. So we're talking about paying everyone the same for the same job. So men, women, not paying women less to do the same job. That's just one small example. So anyway, her foundation did a research, and it's 108 years before equality will be achieved, gender equality.
How long ago was the research done?
Earlier in 2019.
Oh, wow.
So we have a little bit to go.
So 107 years.
Yeah, 107
okay,
years.
We're making progress.
Ticking away. But what her foundation is focused on is accelerating that rate of change. And I think for me, it's about creating awareness, talking about these topics, removing the stigma and the fear around that. I've had people push me away because I talk about it, and they're fearful that I'm going to take some step to impact their life because they've made some misstep instead of just having the dialogue. And that's why I encourage people to just talk about it. Say, I'm not comfortable with this. How can I best address you?
On an individual basis, or they were fearful that you would upset the apple cart of the company?
Both.
Okay.
Yeah, both. Just fear. It's just fear instead of having the dialogue, instead of coming forth and saying, oh, I said this and I perceive that you didn't take it well. So what does that mean? I mean, you know, could I have said it differently? And I had a perfect example the other day. An individual said to me that he was having a dialogue with the VP of some division. And he said to this person who happened to be female, he was male, happened to be female. He said to her, let's get your boss on the phone and we'll figure this out right now.
Let's get your boss on the phone and talk to him about this and get it, you know, the automatic assumption that her boss had to be a male.
And it wasn't, it was another female, but the female who he was speaking to was immediately offended, because why would you go above someone else's head if you wanted to work on something? And his whole mindset was, I'm just going to be efficient. We're going to get this other person on the phone and make the decision to move on. But she took it as, you are
dismissing me.
And so, you know, in that moment, it's also her responsibility to say, so that comment feels as if you're dismissing me. So I want to clarify, right?
Right.
So it's her responsibility as well. But I believe she said something because he knew she was upset, but he just didn't understand, you know,
what the innocent, situation was. Right. Misstep as opposed to a malicious one.
Correct. Assume good intent. You know, be kind and assume good intent. And if something hits you wrong, be responsible for saying that hit me wrong. And I need to understand what your intent is. And let's talk about how that could, how the words that were used could be different in the future.
Right. And I like that you emphasize that that's her responsibility. What comes to mind is I buy an ice cream cone. I give them some money. They give me the change. It's not the correct change. And I say, I need to talk to your boss.
Right.
As opposed to
just, oh, this isn't the right change.
Yeah. I'm a quarter short.
Right.
Okay. Oh, sorry about that. Okay. All's good.
I don't know why we're in this kind of space where there's this immediate reaction. And I myself have done it. So
it's not just a reaction. It's a reaction of I'm offended.
Right.
And I'm like, I would like to strike that word from mm-hmm. vocabulary.
Right. Instead of what did you mean by that? There's that what again. What did you mean by that? I'm taking it. It's hitting me, which is my experience with how people have treated me in the past. But I don't think you intended it that way. You know, what did you mean by that? Because
and
most
when
people,
when they say, "Nope, I did intend it that way," well
that's a different
issue.
Conversation.
And that's probably where we ought to wrap up because we can talk about that one
all day, all day.
On your next appearance on the show.
Absolutely.
Give the folks all your contact info really quick and we'll wrap up.
Absolutely. So if you're interested in a consultation or you just want to reach out and talk about possibilities, my phone number is 530-574-0430. And my website is www.kbsleaders.com. You can also email me at kim@kbsleaders.com.
Thank you, Kim. Wonderful as always. Remember, folks, to live each day of your life as if your legacy matters, because it does. And we'll talk to you next week.